it's going to end up.
Yeah, okay, good. Thanks, John.
Okay, here's the list.
Okay, so
the only thing is...
What do you let you on?
I know, it's huge.
Four are going to come up to you. This one. So this is F on, and then these four, you said?
Yep.
Great, please.
Does that make sense?
No, yeah.
In here and thought I should have brought two cans.
Yeah, shoot.
Bring in the reinforcements.
I'd like to call the Senate Committee on Higher Education to order today. Today we are going to be dealing with Senate File 268, Senator Carlson's bill. And so we will go ahead and proceed with that. Senator Carlson looks to be ready. So, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for giving me and thousands of students the opportunity to talk about the importance of keeping tuition affordable in these tough economic times. Tuition in Minnesota has doubled in the last 10 years, and we cannot continue to balance the budgets of higher education on the backs of students. Let me explain briefly what Senate File 268 would do. Section 1 would limit tuition increases at Minnesota State colleges and universities to the CPI index. Section 2 would limit tuition increases at the University of Minnesota to the CPI index. Section 3 would freeze tuition at Minnesota State colleges and universities for Minnesota resident undergraduate students for 2 years beginning July 1st, 2011. And Section 4 would freeze the University of Minnesota for Minnesota resident undergraduate students for 2 years beginning July 1, 2011. This bill would address the short-term impact of tuition increases and would provide for long-term tuition guidance for Minnesota students and families. The difficult financial times facing families across the state calls for real and substantive reform. With passage of this bill, our Minnesota State colleges and universities and University of Minnesota systems will need to make true structural reform to push revenue to the classrooms and reduce administrative overhead. During past budget shortfalls, we have seen significant increases in tuition, many of which have been made by a vast majority of any reductions to state appropriation. The ongoing tuition guidance called for in this bill will send a message that we are serious about reforming all aspects. The ongoing tuition guidance called for in this bill will allow students attending Minnesota public colleges and universities to better plan for the cost of their education. In these times, it is important that we send a message that we are serious about reforming all aspects of government, and higher education is no exception. We can't continue to pass along the cost directly to the students. Minnesotans pay the third highest average tuition in the nation and the highest average tuition in the Midwest to attend our community and technical colleges, and the 10th highest average tuition in the nation to attend our public four-year institutions. Tuition at Minsky institutions has increased every year since fiscal year 2002, regardless of change in state appropriation. As a part of our discussion about changing how we offer state services, specifically higher education offerings, we must not balance the hardships on the backs of the students and their families. And at this time, Madam Chair, we have some students that would like to testify.
And Senator Carlson, I do have several students on the list here. I am assuming you're starting with Travis Johnson, Jeff Ditburner, and Andrew Spaeth, if they'd like to come forward and join Senator Carlson at the table. Thank you very much for being here with us. If you can just identify yourself for the tape, that would be great.
For the record, my name is Andrew Spaeth. I'm a student at Bemidji State University, and I'm the chair of the Minnesota State University Student Association. MSUSA was established in 1967 as an independent nonprofit organization funded and operated by students. Today, we represent over 75,000 students attending the state universities in Minnesota, including Bemidji, St. Cloud State, Mankato, Winona, Southwest State and Marshall, Moorhead, and Metropolitan State here in St. Paul. It's truly a humbling experience to be here in front of all of you today. You are the leaders of the state of Minnesota and are confronting some of the most extraordinary challenges our state has ever faced. Our students recognize your leadership, and I especially want to thank Chair Fischbach and Senator Carlson and the rest of the membership for starting this important conversation about tuition at our public higher education institutions in Minnesota. In the last decade, tuition at Minnesota State Universities has increased by nearly 100%. As many of you know, in the early 2000s, the Minsky system took a large cut, and our students and their families bore 95% of that cut in increases in tuition. Currently, Minsky is being funded at 2001 levels, yet we are serving nearly 40,000 more students than we did at that time. Our campuses have obviously become much more efficient, but I'm concerned that a continued disinvestment in higher education will ultimately end up in decreased quality of our academic programs and decreased quality of the graduates that we are able to produce. Personally, this has a huge impact on my family and on my life. I have 9 younger siblings. My youngest brother is 7 years old. If we continue on this path, my youngest brother will pay double what I'm paying for a public higher education. State university students in the Minsky system are uniquely positioned to help the state weather these tough economic times and continue to educate the 21st century workforce. Together with the two-year institutions in Minsky, we produce over 60% of the undergraduates in Minnesota. 80% of those graduates stay and work here, becoming the future business leaders, entrepreneurs, engineers, nurses, and technicians our state needs. Our state university students are not asking themselves what we need to do to become competitive. Instead, we're asking ourselves, how can we continue to work towards excellence and push our system to become the most innovative, creative, and highest quality in the nation? Our students have embodied that message in our budget recommendation regarding the state appropriation. This year, for the first time in our association's 44-year history, our budget recommendation includes a transformational fund, a fund dedicated to the long-term fiscal sustainability of the Minsky system. Difficult decisions will have to be made this legislative session, but we must plan ahead. Minnesotans do not want us to sacrifice our children's and grandchildren's future by fixing the $6.2 billion deficit. In 1980, the state funded 80% of higher education costs, and it is no coincidence that 31 years later, in 2011, our state has more Fortune 500 companies per capita than any other state. The Best Buys, the Targets, the 3Ms, and the business community that is prevalent here in our state are here due in part to our highly skilled workforce and the quality of life that we all enjoy. Our students, just as you are concerned about the economic reality of the state's deficit. However, we cannot afford to sacrifice Minnesota's economic vitality and competitiveness by continuing to restrict access to higher education. Today, students pay 56% of public higher education costs, and we have seen tuition increases of nearly 100%. According to the Office of Higher Education, the average student in Minnesota is graduating with over $26,000 in debt. It's hard for our students to contribute to the economy when they're shouldered with that kind of debt. Students attending our state colleges and universities today are the business leaders of tomorrow. Minnesota wants to compete in the global market. We need to give our students and our future leaders the opportunity to become the entrepreneurs, innovators, teachers, and caretakers the 21st century requires. Minnesota enjoys the quality of life that we have today, in part because of the investments in education our state has made in the past. For every dollar the state and our taxpayers invest in public higher education and the Minnesota State Colleges and University system, the return on investment is $10.87. Further reductions in the state appropriation will continue to burden Minnesota's future and our state's economic vitality. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and let the record reflect that we do have a quorum.
Thank you, Chair Fischbach. Members, for the record, my name is Travis Johnson, president of the Minnesota State College Student Association. Next to me is Jeff Dipperner, our vice president. And I speak to you today to share our concerns about the pattern of rapidly increasing tuition on our campuses and to ask your help in controlling tuition increases at our two-year community and technical colleges by capping tuition increases at our institutions over the next biennium. We want to thank Senator Carlson for his awareness of the problems with tuition and his efforts to control tuition increases. It is fortunate you're hearing this bill today, as it's also our rally day and students have traveled here from around the state to express the need to stop tuition increases. Many of you have attended our rally earlier this morning, or you've met with our constituents throughout the day to discuss how tuition impacts their individual success and the state's economic vitality. Even now, if you look around you, this hearing room is packed with our members. Here are students, parents, taxpayers, constituents that support accessible, affordable, and quality higher education. Minnesota's community and technical colleges are an invaluable resource to this state. They are the workers who will boost our short-term economic recovery and the next-generation skilled workforce that will protect Minnesota's legacy of being one of the best places in America to live, work, and run a business. Our colleges provide high-quality training, producing skilled workers ready for the workforce in 2 years or sometimes even less. The technical curriculum is designed to respond quickly to employer needs, and general education provides an accessible pathway to a four-year degree for Minnesotans and communities across the state. The vast majority of our graduates stay in Minnesota, and they contribute to our local economies. In today's economy, a college education is essential to individuals seeking better, more stable lives for themselves and for their families. Our two-year colleges serve Minnesotans from all walks of life, from dislocated workers returning for new marketable skills to students who return to finish a degree that they never completed, or for high school graduates embarking on higher education for the very first time. Unfortunately, as the need for a college education grows, it's becoming harder and harder to obtain. Our community and technical colleges are facing a tuition crisis. At your seats, you should have a copy of our association's budget priorities. It's this blue packet. And as you'll see, our colleges' average tuition and fee rates are the highest in the Midwest and third highest nationally. Tuition and fees have almost doubled in the last 10 years, as illustrated in the chart on the bottom of page 3. Students understand that when there's less state money to invest in higher education, our colleges and universities have an alternative revenue source in tuition. Students also understand that there is some need to increase tuition to continue to have high-quality education in the state. However, this alternative revenue source of tuition has been tapped every year in times of both surplus and deficit. If you turn to the chart on page 3 of our handout, you'll see that tuition at our two-year public colleges has risen steadily every year, regardless of whether or not the system received increased state funding. There's also a pattern to the state appropriation that those concerned about the future of higher education cannot afford to ignore. The cost of educating students in the Minsky system continues to rise, but state appropriations to the system have remained largely flat over the last decade, as you can see on page 2 in the handout. Tuition and fee revenue have made up the difference, and students now provide for well over half of Minsky's revenue. It seems unlikely that the system will see any significant increase in state appropriations over time, and simply relying on tuition increases is not a sustainable model in the long term, nor is it beneficial to the future of our state. Our students have asked us to ask you for help, and I'd like to turn things over to Jeff, who will outline our students' position on tuition control.
Mr. Dipperner.
Thank you, Chair Fischbach and members. Again, for the record, my name is Jeff Dipperner, Vice President of MSCSA. Minsky's tuition rates are generally set by the system's Board of Trustees, who we believe to be sincere in their desire to control tuition costs. We try to work with the Board to address these concerns as much as we can. However, with the budget uncertainties looming, the Board has been unwilling to proactively set a cap on tuition. Campuses have been given a planning estimates of a, quote, reasonable tuition increase by the Office of the Chancellor, as discussed, as a 5% in each year of the biennium. Our students simply do not agree with this scenario. A tuition increase of 10% over the biennium, in addition to a 2% hike our students already face with the loss of the stimulus funds, is unreasonable. If history is any indicator of how budget cuts would be handled without a tuition cap, it's clear that students would be asked to shoulder a significant portion of these cuts in the form of tuition increases. In 2003, when the state faced a roughly $4.3 billion deficit, the Minsky system base was reduced by $191 million. In order to make up that difference, colleges across the system implemented double-digit tuition increases that still have negative consequences on students today. In total, $173.6 million of that $191 million cut, or just over 90%, was paid for by students in the form of increased tuition, and that's completely unacceptable. Students want to be part of the budget solution, but we are unwilling to be the budget solution. For context, a 5% tuition increase over each year in each year of the biennium today would bring $120.5 million in new revenue to the Minsky system. Governor Dayton's budget proposal includes a 6% budget reduction for Minsky, reducing the system to the actual 2011 base by only about $13 million. Or $26 million in the biennium. We applaud Senator Carlson for his bold proposal to freeze tuition. While we cannot fully support a bill to freeze tuition, we would like to work with the committee in the future to further develop a legislatively mandated tuition cap over the two-year Minsky system. Thank you, and we will stand for any questions.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions from the committee? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if your student association groups taking a stand on how much you think the taxpayers should pay of your education, you said it's a little under 50% right now. Do you think that's enough or it's not enough, or how much would you like the taxpayers to pay of the actual cost of tuition?
Madam Chair, Senator Peterson, thank you for the question. Well, it's written in state statute that the state would cover two-thirds of the cost of a public higher education in Minnesota. Currently, our students are paying 56% of that cost, and so we're not even currently in line with state statute. But I think we need to consider this an investment. As I stated in my previous remarks, for every dollar that our taxpayers invest in the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, the return on investment is $10.87.
Senator Peterson.
A follow-up. I think that two-thirds number is in dispute. But so if I can interpret your answer, you're saying that you think it's appropriate for the taxpayers to pay two-thirds of that tuition no matter what it costs?
Mr. Spaeth.
Madam Chair, Senator Peterson, I'm not here to advocate for the two-thirds number. I'm here to discuss that what history has shown and the fact that tuition has increased by nearly 100% in the last decade, and our students don't find that acceptable.
Just to follow up, I would find it helpful if you guys would take a vote at some time in the future and at least let my office know in Senate District 15 what you think is appropriate as a student, you know, what percentage of the tuition you think the taxpayers ought to pay. You know, I'd be curious to know what that is.
Mr. Spaeth.
Madam Chair, Senator Peterson, thank you again. We will take that into consideration, I work for a board of directors, and so be sure to bring that to their attention, and we'll do the best we can. I just want to reiterate that in 1980, the state covered 80% of the cost of a public higher education in Minnesota, with students paying the other 20%. We've seen a fundamental shift in how our state is investing in higher education. And so just leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Tomasoni, you're so far away.
I don't mean to be. And I think 10 years ago, it was two-thirds, one-third, wasn't it? And in no new taxes parlance, an increase in tuition is not a tax. And so what's been going on over the last 10 years is that you've been paying more tuition because the state hasn't been holding up its end of the bargain. Isn't that a nutshell summary of what has happened?
Mr. Spaeth.
And you know, if you don't want to get political here, don't. But you can just say that might be it or something like that. But I think that that might be what it is.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Spaeth.
Senator Thomasoni, thank you for the question. You might be it. Yeah, that might be it. You might be
it. Mr. Spaeth, there's no obligation to agree with Senator Thomasoni.
I told him that. I just wanted to make sure Senator Peterson knew because he wasn't here during all the no new taxes stuff, and some of us think a tax is a tax and a fee is a tax. So you can, and maybe an increase in tuition might even be a tax. So a tax is a tax.
Thank you. Further questions from the committee? If not, thank you very much, gentlemen. And I know that we have other folks who would like to testify. I would like, next on my list, I have Jonathan Schmidt from the University of Minnesota. Welcome to the committee. Just please identify yourself for the record and go ahead when you're ready.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm John Schmidt from the University of Minnesota, and I'm a double major in economics and chemistry. And I'd like to thank you for allowing me to testify on behalf of students today. In regards to the Senate Bill 268, I've talked to students about it, and they've told me that they do like the fact that tuition is controlled in some way. It allows them to budget for college and gives them a perspective on the cost of attendance because there's no ambiguity in year for year, so they're not faced with a double-digit percentage tuition increase from year to year. And it also allows for students who are on the margin who may not be able to afford college if there is a significant increase. They won't be excluded from attending at a later date. But they did also have some concerns that they'd like me to address. They're concerned about the quality of their education and how it could be affected by a tuition freeze. They're concerned about the class offerings because it may be more difficult to get the necessary classes. As a double major in chemistry and economics, it's kind of been tough to make it all fit together, and some classes that are necessary for graduation are only offered once a semester, or once a year, or maybe only have one section of them. And so if I can't, or like if students or I can't make that work, that may delay graduation. And that would be another semester of tuition fees and costs of attending and keeping me out of the workforce. Also, they were concerned about the ability for the university to keep quality faculty on staff and pay them competitive rates so they could, so they'll stay, and it keeps our programs rigorous. And also, it might cut into student services such as the Career Center, which helps students find jobs in the workforce after graduation. And it might also cut into advising programs, and I personally have been affected by the advising programs a lot. They've been really helpful in helping me figure out how to make this double major work, what classes I need to take, and when. Also, it may impact the facilities in a number of ways, and it may affect the upkeep and maintenance of our buildings on campus. We might not be able to afford maintenance on those buildings and keeping the staff necessary to keep the buildings clean, and it might impact on the aesthetics of the campus as well. And also, some of the students that I talked to were concerned how the university would react to the filling the budget gap because it prevents the administration from mitigating cuts from the state funding with a tuition revenue. And the easiest fund to help fill the gap is the $30 million private scholarship fund for need-based financial aid. Also, it may affect the U-Promise scholarship, which helps a lot of middle-class students pay their tuition and help mitigate tuition fees, and it's helped me personally afford college. And the university also may be forced to decrease enrollment, which the students thought would be a step in the wrong direction because in 2020, about 75% of jobs will need a college education. The bill does cover a freeze in tuition, but it does not regulate the student fees that the students pay. So another way that the administration may fill the budget gap is significantly increasing the fees to students for different things on campus. I personally paid $1,300 or $1,320.15 in fees this semester. Gives you a pegging. Although this bill is not the best way to control tuition, we believe that tuition increases that we have seen over the past decade cannot be sustained, and students and families are already having a tough time handling the high cost of attending college as it is, and more double-digit tuition increases would continue this trend. Students hope that the legislature and the university administration can work together to provide a reasonable tuition environment for students. And I'd like to thank Senator Carlson for authoring this bill and inviting the people affected most to testify.
Thank you very much. Question from the committee, Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Schmidt, I'm sorry, I was unclear. Are you in favor or opposed to the legislation?
I guess we overall would be opposed to it, but we do like the fact that it is bringing to the table a lot of important questions about funding higher education and the tuition that we pay.
All right. Thank you.
Senator Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Schmidt, I would be, being that you're an economics major, I would be interested in having either the economics department from the students at the University of Minnesota or through the Minsky system or both to issue a challenge of examining the economics of state government and examining if we can continue with 27% spending increases along with $4 billion tax increases, just examining the long-term effect. If we do that this biennium, do we continue to do it next biennium and in future bienniums? Or studying that against, does the state have a spending problem and do we need to address that or combine both? But I would love, we get these reports all the time from academics. I would love to get the students' input as to examining these issues that we face in the state legislature and actually issuing a report back to this committee at some point. I would love to hear from the students in that area.
All right. Mr. Schmidt.
Hopefully that makes sense.
Senator Brown, Madam Chair, yeah, that makes sense, and I'll work on it.
Thank you.
Further questions or requests for reports from the committee?
Public policy problem.
If not, thank you very much. And we have, next on the list, we have Russ Stanton with the Interfaculty Association. Thank you for joining us. Please identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I have a handout. It has been passed out. Madam Chair, members, my name is Russ Stanton. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Interfaculty Organization. For the new members of the committee, the Interfaculty Organization is the union that represents this faculty at the seven state universities in Minnesota. I'm here to testify in opposition to Senate File 268. I want to emphasize that my organization, I've been doing this job now for 26 sessions. My organization has always been a strong advocate of low tuition and affordable public education. But the problem is, in the last decade, the state of Minnesota's commitment to higher education has slipped very, very badly. State funding has not funded enrollment growth. State funding has not funded inflation. And as a result, the cost of running our colleges and universities have been pushed off of state appropriations and onto students in the form of higher tuition, which is causing the rates to go up rapidly. I passed out a spreadsheet, which I think illustrates this. It looks kind of complicated, but it's really pretty simple. If you look, the governor yesterday announced his proposed appropriation for each year in 2012 and 2013 for Minsky was $592.6 million a year. If you look, that is $9 million less than the appropriation to Minsky 10 years ago in fiscal year 2002. The problem with that is since 2002, if you look at the column 5 with enrollment, The enrollment in MinSCU has gone from 126,215 students to 158,071 students. MinSCU is educating about 32,000 more students, will be educating about 32,000 more students next year on about $9 million less than they had 10 years ago. That's the equivalent of Winona State University's enrollment. That's the equivalent of St. Cloud's enrollment. And that's the equivalent of Bemidji's enrollment combined that is being educated at MinSCU institutions with no additional appropriations, in fact, less appropriations. On top of that, since 2002, there's been 15.7% inflation and no appropriation to cover that. The costs associated with enrollment growth and inflation are real, and the money has to come from somewhere, and unfortunately, it has come from the students and their parents. In column 6 and 7 of the spreadsheet, you will see that the last time the state lived up to its statutory policy of the students paying one-third of the cost of instruction and the state paying two-thirds of the cost of instruction was in 2002 when they paid 66% and the students paid 33%. Since that, it has fallen consistently as the costs are shifted onto students to the point where the state is now only paying 43% and the students are paying 56.6%. That is the reason why tuition is going up. MinSCU is a very highly efficient system. Our cost of delivering instruction is among the lowest in the nation for comparable types of institutions. The per pupil inflation adjusted cost of education in Minnesota has been stable and declining in the last decade. It is not costs that are driving this, it's the shift from state appropriations onto tuition. Relative to other institutions in Minnesota, MinSCU rates are the lowest. Private colleges, average student tuition and fees, $30,816. U of M, $11,091. MinSCU, only $6,596. One of the reasons for that is the historical efficiency of that of the MinSCU system. The faculty have been doing their share. We negotiated on our own. We came forward with it for a two-year freeze 2 years ago. We've negotiated flat increases in health care costs. We've had, thanks to Senator Pappas, early retirement incentives that have saved millions by turning over the high-cost people at the top rather than laying off the new people at the bottom. And, of course, we've had all kinds of layoffs, 80 positions eliminated at Mankato, 80 at St. Cloud. We just had it at Bemidji this week, 37 faculty positions that are going to disappear, and it's only going to get worse. And the problem with that is fewer faculty mean fewer sections offered, programs closing, students taking longer to complete, bigger class sizes, less advising and individual attention, none of which is good for students. We encourage you to keep tuition down the old-fashioned way, provide enough state funding so that we can keep up with inflation, so that we can keep up with enrollment growth, and so that the students pay their share of the cost. Finally, let me say that we oppose setting tuition rates in the political arena. We have a board of trustees. They're all Pawlenty appointees. Their charge is to manage the system, including setting tuition rates. They have a very extensive student consultative process where students have input into the tuition rates. And we believe that you should leave them with the flexibility to make these decisions in a rational and objective way rather than in a highly charged political environment. Thank you very much.
Questions from the committee? Mr. Stanton, I was just wondering, on your sheet, you've got state appropriations, tuition, revenue. Do you have anywhere the costs so that we could compare? I mean, I understand what the argument you're making is that because the state appropriations gone down, the tuition's gone up. Mm-hmm. But I don't see any place here that you talk about.
Column 10 is the tuition and revenue, tuition, revenue, and state appropriation. That equals the cost.
That is okay.
And,
so we're not.
And you can see it's $200 less per pupil than it was in 2002. But if you look at columns 8 and 9, you see what's happened is the state share dropped rapidly and the student share went up rapidly to fill in the difference.
But do you have figures here that would reflect, and you know what?
Sure.
Because you mentioned some cuts, and that's why I was trying to figure out where here that if those reflected, you talked about how the cost was going, or that they had been so many cuts at the universities. I was trying to figure out where I could find that here.
The cuts at the universities?
So maybe you could explain it again. Show me where I could find that.
You won't find it on this sheet.
Okay.
What happens is you give a lump of money last year, $605.5 million to MinSCU. MinSCU takes most of that and divides it up, and it goes out by a formula to the campuses. And then the campuses have to live within that. And if it isn't enough money to go around, then they cut.
Okay.
They have to make cuts. They cut positions. They do other things.
I understand. I guess maybe the numbers that I'm thinking that would be interesting to put in here just aren't on the sheet. So,
okay, sure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there other questions from the committee? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Stanton, as a representative of the Faculty Association, I'm sure. I mean, everybody reads the newspapers, and I would say higher education is probably easily 3 years behind the rest of the economy in terms of layoffs. Is there a sense, or do you guys have an opinion or an argument of why higher education should be exempt from the layoffs that the rest of the community and the private sector is experiencing?
Mr. Shannon.
Madam Chair, we did have a delay in having to face the pain because we had some federal stimulus money that we got so that it hit us a little bit later. But we didn't sit back. We knew that federal stimulus money runs out at the end of this year, and every one of our colleges and universities has gone through reorganization efforts, and they have been eliminating positions, some 80 positions at St. Cloud, if you want to. So we have had layoffs. I believe that by the end of when we're done with the reorganization and layoffs, we will have lost about 10% of our positions. The word decimate comes from the old Roman practice that if the soldiers lost a battle, they'd line them up and every 10th one was executed. Well, we're more than decimated with the cuts already.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am sensitive to your position, but I can assure you 10% is not decimated. Manufacturing sectors have dealt with more like 30 to 40% in layoffs and reduction in sales and that type of thing. So I understand in your fields and that you maybe have never experienced anything like this before, and I'm sensitive to that, certainly. But I would encourage you to talk to some of the private employers in the community that you live in, and I can assure you a 10% reduction in staff is very, very low compared to what most folks are dealing with, in my view. So, thank you.
I don't have the figures.
Senator Saxok.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to make a comment. I'm sure that the 10% for MinSCU colleges is not low, but I think we all remember, and I think historically facts will prove me out, that as soon as you have high unemployment, there's more people that are going back to be retrained and reeducated, and you're going to find that ultimately right away you're going to see more people going back to school. Consequently, you can reduce the number of employees at the MinSCU University, and I think we have, but I think we're seeing higher class sizes and the like just because of that.
Senator Sharon.
Well, I think that's demonstrated here, Senator Saxog, on the handout. We're looking at the state appropriations between 2002 and 2011, and then the enrolled FYEs that are indicating the substantial increase. So what these numbers are showing us is, unlike the private marketplace where layoffs occur because there's less customers coming in the door, less purchasing of the product, less demand for the employers to have those employees. In these situations, what we have is a reduction in the amount of money that the state is appropriating, an increase in the number of students that are coming to be trained. We're asking them to train about 40,000 more students on 2001 levels of funding and reducing their staff. And that's unique, and very different than the conditions in the private marketplace.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Stanton, I agree with you. And the problem is that we don't have the money to do what you want us to do, because as you're hearing my colleagues from the other side of the aisle talk about this, they don't want to fund the shortfall.
I agree.
And if you take a look at what has happened over the last 10 years at a four-year Minsku institution, the tuition and fees were about $3,600 in 2000-2001. If it would have followed the CPI 10-year increase which is 27% between 2000 and 2010, that tuition would be up to $4,500. But the fact of the matter is we had a 91% increase since 2000-2001, and today tuition and fees are $6,900 at a four-year Minsky college. And the people who are sitting in the audience here, they're concerned about their debt load when they get out of college, having a mortgage, not owning a house, and not having a job. And how do you pay for those yep. fees and those things? So those and so we at the legislature have certain pots of money that we can grab, and one of the pots of money we can grab is funding our colleges. And it's actually kind of an easy spot, because all you do is raise tuition and then you say it's all done. But the people in the audience here are the ones who have to pay. And I don't know what the answer is here, because I don't like freezing tuition, but I also don't like not funding our colleges. And somewhere along the way, we got to get a handle on this, and we got to think about the future, because we are going to be needing educated workforce. I think somebody said 75% of the jobs in the next few years are going to be college-educated people, and will they be able to afford the college in order to get the jobs is the question. And here in the legislature, somewhere along the way, we got to figure out how to get tuition down by funding the colleges. And I don't know if freezing tuition is the right way to do this or not, but somewhere along the way here, we have to rectify the fact that we haven't been funding colleges is the reason tuition has been going up.
I couldn't,
Mr. Stanton,
Senator, Madam Chair, I couldn't agree more. I gave this speech a few years ago when Senator Pappas was chairing the committee. You know, I went through college at public college, $3.75 a credit hour. back when I was in college. The students paid about 20% of the cost of instruction. The taxpayers paid the other 80%. And, you know, the generation that did that were people who oftentimes, you know, my father had an 8th grade education. That's the generation that taxed themselves at rates a lot higher than we're taxing right now, so that our generation could go to school. And frankly, I'm embarrassed by my generation. I'm embarrassed what they're leaving for the next generation, because we've gone for lower and lower taxes, pushing more and more of the costs off into the future, and it's these people here that are going to pay it, and they're paying it in tuition, and this is how it works its way out. And, you know, I just think it's going to take some discipline on the part of people.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Stanton, perhaps I should have asked the student economist this question, but what can you tell us about the CPI? You have it on your chart, but I've been told that it's not a very good measurement for higher education costs. Can you comment on that at all?
Mr.
Stanton.
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, a number of years ago I was at a NEA retirement workshop, and I actually went to a breakout session where the person in the Department of Labor who set the CPI gave the talk, and he basically said it doesn't represent anything because it's an average. Different costs rise at different rates, but generally speaking, higher education costs have risen faster than the CPI, the Consumer Price Index. There's an index called the HEPI Index, Higher Education Price Index, mm-hmm. and generally that's risen faster. I haven't looked at it in the last couple of years, but I think CPI tends to be the most universally accepted measure of inflation.
Senator Roebling, I have Senator Brown, Senator Miller, unless it's to that point.
Well, it does go back to the comment about the credit and the CPI and the one that's used by higher education. And I know that, you know, $3 per credit really sounds good to everybody right now. But I wonder how many faculty would want to go back to the salaries that were paid when that was when that was what was offered to the students. We certainly have seen cost drivers. And when we say that the higher education price index is higher than the regular CPI, it is largely labor costs.
Senator Brown.
Yes, Madam Chair. I guess I'm of the opinion that as a state legislature, we need to decide what core functions of state government are, because right now we want to fund everything, mm-hmm. and we're seeing where that leads us, 27% increases, major tax increases. And I believe education is a core function of state government mm-hmm. and should be funded accordingly. Mm-hmm. But because of decisions that we make, we can't do that right now. And I think that's a mistake. So I'm wondering if you have an opinion for the legislature on what the solution to this is. Is it to continue spending increases and tax increases? Is it to determine core functions without tax increases? I didn't know if you were brave enough to offer an opinion on that.
Well, Madam
Mr.
Chair,
Stanton.
I'll very bravely offer an opinion. It should be done through tax increases. That's very definitely our position that it should be done through tax increases. It's a core function of government. It isn't that you can't do it now. It's that you won't do it now. I mean, there's a difference. You do have it in your power to tax yourselves at the same rate that they taxed back in 1999, which was a lot higher than we're taxing people now. And if we had not dropped the taxes, I mean, we cut tax rates by $1 billion in 1999 and again in 2000. What that meant is every year since then, you're falling $2 billion short in revenue. And at first you covered it up by draining the tax, the tobacco funds, and then the rainy day funds, and then, you know, you began shifting expenses into the next years. I'm suggesting that we look at taxing ourselves the way we used to, and we could afford the services we used to.
Madam
Senator
Chair,
Brown.
Would you also say that we're spending the way that we used to?
No,
Mr. Stanton.
Madam Chair, I think actually state spending is as a percentage of personal income, it's been dropping, state and local government. We don't expect every time things are tight to raise taxes, but, you know, we've been, that's been the 800-pound gorilla in the room for a long time, and nobody's been willing to deal with it.
Thank you.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Stanton, I'm just wondering if you have an opinion on Governor Dayton's budget proposal, which did include significant tax increases but still decreased the appropriation to higher education.
Mr. Stanton.
Madam Chair, Senator Miller, given the mess he inherited, I think he's doing the best he can right now, trying to pay it off. I was hoping there wouldn't be cuts to higher education. There are. We're going to have to deal with it.
Thank you.
Senator Peterson.
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Stanton, I find it a little bit interesting that the Faculty Association would support tax increases but then wouldn't be willing to take that same value in a tax increase in a salary reduction to help out the expenses of the university. I just got the average salary faculty survey, and I can get copies to everybody if they're interested in it at G24 here after the committee hearing. But this tells us the average salary at the U of M is $125,000. And if they have a spouse that makes $75,000, they're over $200,000, and they're in that 5% threshold that the governor is talking about, if I remember the details from his budget. And so they're going to have a tax increase as the governor's proposed. Why wouldn't the faculty administration just be willing to give that 3 or 4% up front right now and avoid the tax increase, do you think?
Mr. Stanton.
Madam Chair, first of all, our people don't make $125,000.
Well, I can give you this survey.
I'm State University faculty, not the University of Minnesota.
What college would you like me to give you here?
St. Cloud.
Senator Peterson.
Yeah, they don't have St. Cloud on here. How about... I got U of M Crookston. Is that similar to St. Cloud?
No.
Duluth?
Totally different.
Different system. Okay.
I can tell you.
Well, what do you think? What's the average salary in St. Cloud? Then you have a sense
for
that.
I think Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I think the latest salary figures that I saw, the average salary for IFO member would be somewhere $73,000, $74,000.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions from the Senator Sharon?
Yes, I just wanted to respond to Senator Roebling to describe context when you're talking about tuition at $3, and you guys are a lot older than I am, an 80% state, but you know, in terms of the cost drivers, you know, Senator Roebling, I'm sure that this is a struggle, but to talk about would the faculty accept the salary the same back then along with the tuition. And I think that we have to take that in the context. Would we accept how much a car cost back then? Would we accept how much housing cost back then? How much gas cost then? We can't just take a shot at one of the costs and say that that's the driver. Everything in terms of what it costs to live today has gone up, what it costs for tuition has gone up. So, you know, I think that if we could take everything down to that level and pay the increased taxes, my question would we be willing to do that?
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to remind the members that Mr. Stanton started off by saying that the IFO faculty at Minsku did take a 2-year freeze in their salary increase. So I think they were trying to be part of the solution. And, of course, a lot of people have been laid off. Yes. And have lost their jobs. And then, Senator Peterson, I just wanted to correct something you said, that $200,000, that was taxable income the governor's talking about, Senator Peterson, not gross income. And so that's quite a bit different, especially after you deduct federal taxes as well. So it's a much higher income level before the governor's tax proposal would kick in.
Senator Peterson.
So that's focusing on like a small business person that has a business that makes $200,000 a year. Is that what it would be?
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, Senator Peterson, we're talking about taxable income, and I think small businesses are not a tax expert, but do have a lot of deductions that they can apply to their business to reduce their tax liability. So they probably would fall below the taxable income threshold.
Okay, thank you.
If there are no further questions.
Madam Chair.
Senjum. Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if my question's been asked before I got here, just interrupting me, I'll look at the tapes. But just referencing this document here and those numbers, and they may or may not be right per our chart. But they are kind of telling in terms of the differences and just frankly just numbers. And we're looking at 4,600 on Minnesota, Illinois, as I recall, has a $17 billion deficit. I'm not sure what their commitment to higher education has been, but I would believe they've had some of the same struggles that we've had, and other states have as well. The question is, can you explain any of this, or do you know of anybody that's actually kind of analytically looked at these number differences and tried to understand why the disparity between Minnesota and the rest of these states? I mean, it is significant.
Mr. Stanton.
Senator Sundjum, this is the first I've seen this document. I can tell you that a big reason is because Minnesota per capita spending on higher education is very low. I would encourage you, all of you, there's a magazine called Governing Magazine, you probably all get it, that does all the comparisons between the states, and I would encourage you to look at the per capita expenditures for higher education in Minnesota compared to other states. We're way well into the bottom half. I mean, we're below Mississippi and Alabama in terms of per capita spending on higher education. There's this kind of myth that Minnesota has always been this great funder of higher education, and at one time we were. You know, if you look at Session Weekly, it's the back page of the chart that I sent out. There's an index. You know, in 1987, 15.5% of the state budget went for higher education. Now it's 8.8% goes to higher education. The governor's budget came out, and I noticed yesterday that it would fall to 7.4. The reason tuition is going up is the state hasn't been putting money into higher education.
Madam Chair.
Senator Sundjum.
Perhaps if it's not too much trouble, would it perhaps our committee administrator be able to maybe pull some of this information about relative support for higher education by at least some of these Midwestern states?
And Senator Sundjum, I think he will be able to do that, and he will be happy to provide you and the rest of the committee with that. He's making notes as we speak. So, thank you. We do have several other individuals who have signed up to testify, and my understanding is they were going to come up as a group. I'm not sure, but Robin Wright, Carolyn Hayes, Christopher Ugin, and Emily Hoover. Is that correct? They wanted to come as a group. And then please, if you can identify yourself for the tape, and then go ahead with however you'd have planned.
Madam Chair, I'm Caroline Hayes, and with me today to talk about the University of Minnesota are Emily Hoover, Chris Ugin, and Robin Wright. And what we're going to be addressing is some of the innovations in education that we are currently undertaking at the university, so we can, from a ground level, tell you a little bit about what we view and what we see as the educational, the current 21st century educational needs of our students and our state and our industries in the state. So we're going to start with Robin Wright.
Hi, my name's Robin Wright. And I have to tell you, I lecture sometimes to hundreds of students, and this is the scariest thing I've ever done in my whole life.
Well, please, don't be scared of us. I think we're pretty friendly, with the exception of Senator Tomasoni, right?
She'd like I've me. Seen
and I'm just teasing you.
I want to thank you. I look at you as representatives of all the moms and dads and grandfathers, uncles, aunts, et cetera, of my students. And you send me the best students in the whole world. I've been in a lot of places. I've been at UC Berkeley. I've been at the University of Washington. And the students that you send to me are the joy of my life. It's one of the greatest privileges of my entire career to be able to interact with these students. They aren't just smart. They roll up their sleeves and they work. And their hearts are in the right place, too. They want to make a difference in the world. And I think you see that around here. So thank you so much. I will tell you that there were almost 7,000 applicants to my college this year, to undergrads, for 450 slots. I could not have gotten into my own college. I wouldn't have been competitive. It's amazingly competitive to get into my college. And so it's a different world, both in terms of who has access to the University of Minnesota and also what kinds of things we need to teach. Let me tell you about biology. We can, because I'm a biologist, I guess I didn't tell you that, we can contemplate literally within our lifetimes the ability of a physician to grow you a new heart whenever you need one, a new liver. My sister just died waiting for a liver transplant, and so this is quite amazing. It used to be enough, when I started, it used to be enough to study one gene at a time. I could write a paper about one gene. Now, you have to not only study every gene in an organism, but every gene in every organism in that spot of dirt that you're looking at. There's equipment that I couldn't have dreamt about. It almost feels like when I go into my laboratory, it feels like I'm in a Star Wars movie or something, Star Trek. It really is a different world. It brings many different challenges. Not only do students have to know the old stuff, but the new stuff that every day I pick up a journal article and there's something amazing happening, things that I never thought would be possible that I would see. So what we're faced with is we need to have, honestly, a revolution in how we teach our students. It isn't enough to just know the content about biology. It's not enough to be able to take a multiple choice exam. We have to help our students use that information to do things, to develop new solutions, to solve problems, to think critically, to be at the forefront. And so imagine, for those of you who've taken a biology course, can you imagine your last college course, whenever that was, you would walk in and you'd be sitting in a lecture theater kind of like this and you've got somebody blabbing up at the front. Nowadays, back then, some of you may have been asleep at your desk or writing notes to one another. Nowadays, a lot of people are on, you know, YouTube or whatever in the background. Maybe some of you are right now. Instead, imagine you walk into a room, and I see a couple of the senators here who've visited this classroom. You walk into a room, and it has round tables. And you're expected to come to class already knowing the stuff from the textbook. And what we do in that classroom is not tell you stuff you can read about. We charge you with solving problems using what you know. You work in groups. You use the biology to develop those lifelong skills of teamwork and communication, problem solving, critical thinking, analysis that all of us are going to need no matter whether you pursue biology, medicine, or government, public service. So being able to teach in this different way is a huge challenge. You don't just have the challenge of content, what to teach, how to teach it. And finally, I'm going to circle back, and then I'll be quiet. I'm going to circle back to those amazing, wonderful students that you send to me. There is one way they can be slightly better. And part of my job is to mentor them so that when they go and they're interviewing, like many of the students are right now, it's the season to interview for pre-med, for medical school. Students are going to Baylor. One of my students is going to Baylor. Students are going, of course, to the University of Minnesota and others. Our students are at a disadvantage because you've taught them to be too humble. That's just the honest truth. And so part of my job is to mentor them so that they can say, I developed this. I did this. So that they are even more competitive. Working one-on-one with students, whether they're in, helping them to develop teamwork, but also one-on-one, so that they practice those interviews. And they walk in, and that person who's sitting across the table from them realizes they have a wonderful brain, and they see the hard work that they're capable of, and they also see their heart. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so shall we proceed through all of us and then do questions?
Ms. Hayes, I think that works unless somebody stops me and somebody thinks in particular they've got a question for a specific person, but I think go ahead, and I don't know who you'd like to asked to speak next. So.
Okay. So,
can I just interrupt one thing? I forgot to tell you, you all are welcome anytime to come visit our classrooms. We have an open door policy, and we tell students they can bring their friends as well.
Thank you. Ms. Hayes, who would you like to have go next?
I guess. So I'm going to speak next. I'm a mechanical engineer, and I use these our department uses these classrooms, the new science and student, the new
science
active
teaching.
Yes, it's brand new, so we haven't got all the names down yet. You know, we're still active learners ourselves. But at any rate, one of the many classes that I teach is our capstone design course. And in this course, we teach students to take real problems that are offered by our industry partners, and they create real solutions, they build the solutions, they test the solutions, all in the course of one semester. Now, the way in which this has been done has changed over the years. The way we teach design now is not the same as it was 15 years ago or even 5 years ago. It used to be out in companies that if you had a design team making new product, all those people literally sat around the same table. Nowadays, it doesn't work like that. We have people who might be in Arizona and people who might be in New York and people who are in Minneapolis and St. Paul and further afield than that, they might be in Ireland or China, and all these people are on the same design team. So people, designers have to learn a new way of designing that involves these teams that work across distance and work with a lot of technology, simulations, and social networking as well. So the way we teach design has changed. Now, up until recently, the facilities that we had for teaching design, basically, you know, last spring when I taught this course, it was in a basement room which didn't really have an operating PA system, which periodically flooded. You know, we had to tell everybody to kind of walk around the big puddle in the front so they wouldn't get their shoes wet. And it was pretty deep, too. So this was kind of embarrassing to not only for us to say this is the classroom we have for our students, but also for our industrial sponsors. This year, we have the active learning classrooms. This is perfect for the type of modern design we need to teach because the round tables are perfect for the design teams. It's a highly wired classroom. As you can see, there are screens and computer hookups all over the room. Our students can look up information on the web for their design project as they work, or they could use these same screens and web connections to connect to, say, a team that they are working with at the University of Oklahoma or the University of Arizona. And in fact, I have a grant proposal in to do this very thing so that we can educate our students in this way in these classrooms. So in short, the way in which we teach and the needs have changed. And we have a real jewel in the University of Minnesota. And a few stats that I forgot to mention in the very beginning are not only are we one of the top universities in the country, we are one of the top universities in the world. And in particular, in science and liberal arts, and I looked this up last night, we are listed as number, I think in science and engineering, we're number 27 in the world. And in liberal arts, we are number 30. There are not many universities like that in the world. We have a jewel. This is a jewel we need to protect and maintain for our students and for the future health of our state and our students and our workforce. Thank you. So next we'll Chris Eugen.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Eugen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Chris Eugen. I'm a faculty member and department chair in the Department of Sociology. I also co-chaired the College of Liberal Arts Planning Committee, the Blue Ribbon Planning Committees that the provost charged us with last year. But today I'll speak for myself and not as a representative of the college. I've been a proud faculty member at the university since 1995, but the U has always been a big part of my life. I grew up in West St. Paul, graduated from Henry Sibley long ago. It is a wonderful honor, as others have spoken, to work with our students. As you've seen today, they're more organized and articulate often than the faculty. I see their skills, their intelligence, their work ethic, and I hire as many of them as I can on my funded research projects. I can also bring the message that the faculty at the University of Minnesota are not complacent about the budget challenges that the state is facing and that the university is facing, and that we're really part of the change process, and I think a very positive part. In a College of Liberal Arts, we've had a reduction of about $2 million in our controllable budget in the last 3 years, so it has forced us to make some hard choices. We realized that across-the-board cuts would really reduce us to mediocrity, so we moved quickly into making strategic changes and changes that will really position us for the next century. We offered 62 concrete recommendations, but student centricity is really the key thing, a student-centric college. This has always been our commitment, but that commitment is renewed and strengthened today, and in part because in the College of Liberal Arts, the university's largest college, tuition accounts for over 70% of our budget. But student centricity means continually aligning our curriculum with the needs of students. You heard from John Schmidt earlier, an economics student. We knew we needed to move resources into economics. We had a real surge in enrollments and need there. And it means teaching courses at times and places that work best for them. It means increasing student-faculty interaction, which, as you've heard, is really one of the hallmarks of great education at the university. And it means connecting our students with more than 65,000 CLA alumni, supporters, and stakeholders in the Twin Cities alone, and thousands more throughout Minnesota. And, of course, it means strengthening ties with our world-class corporate, scientific, arts, and financial organizations that are all at the university's doorstep. So this is linking learning with service and theory with practice in Minnesota and around the world. All this requires focus and commitment. So we anticipate that the College of Liberal Arts in 2015 will likely be smaller in number of faculty and number of programs. But our students will be in signature programs that are distinct as well as distinctive. That means that they're going to have an identity that the students can carry with them as they leave the university. We're also working hard to increase revenues and cut costs, making small investments that are to roll out new programs that are meeting the needs of a changing Minnesota, and paring back programs that no longer serve students to the greatest extent. We're also reducing administrative costs, although I can say we've done a lot of analysis to show that we are quite lean already. So like the others, I came here today as a stakeholder with a deep commitment to the university. Without state investments, I would not have gotten the smaller seed grants that later turned into larger funded projects. I wouldn't have had the privilege of teaching thousands of U of M students, and I wouldn't be part of the great future, the very bright future of the state's PhD granting university. Thank you.
Thank you very much. By process of elimination, Ms. Hoover. Oh, we can get a page to grab those. They've got handouts.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Emily Hoover, and I'm a professor in the Department of Horticultural Science. I'm also the head of the Department of Horticultural Science, which is part of the College of Food, Agriculture, and Natural Resource Sciences. So I think I said science about 10 times in there. Part of the mission of the Department of Horticultural Science, as well as the College of Food, Agriculture, and Natural Resource Sciences, is one of the great traditions that a land-grant institution at the University of Minnesota is, and that we not only teach undergraduates and graduate students and professional students, we also are funded through the Minnesota Agricultural Experiment Station, as well as the University of Minnesota Extension Service. The true land-grant mission of the university is really held within my department, or we're actually, a good ideal of what it is. We're all about people. We educate people. We educate people who take classes for credit. We educate people who take classes for not for credit, but for interest. We also do a large outreach component to the citizens of Minnesota. What you're holding in your hand is a publication called Minnesota Hardy that highlights really some of the very tangible research efforts that we have at the University of Minnesota in the Department of Horticultural Science. What this pamphlet does is demonstrate the research that we've done, our faculty have done, to develop new plants that specifically have one overwhelming problem that we have in Minnesota, and that is that they need to be able to survive Minnesota winters. There are no other horticulture departments, either public or private, that are trying to find plant material that can grow in the climate that we call home. Some of you may have tasted a Honeycrisp apple. You'll see that that was developed within our department. Some of you might have planted a Rosy Lights azalea. The Lights azalea collection came out of our department. And what you can see then is the visible attributes of the research of our programs. But the underpinning of those programs are very invisible. You don't see the number of undergraduate research projects that are part and parcel of every one of these breeding programs. You don't look and see the number of graduate thesis projects that have been granted as part of these research programs. You don't see the development of the small businesses, particularly one that we're particularly proud of right now, or the number of wineries that we have bonded in the state of Minnesota, all based on plant material released from the program in the Department of Horticultural Science. We have a lot of citizen interest. We have a lot of national grants. We have a lot of international collaborations as a result of the funding that we get through the state of Minnesota, through the Agriculture Experiment Station, through the Extension Service, as well as through tuition that our students pay to come to take our courses. I have a number of roles at the university. I've been at the university since 1982. I know I look really young, but I'm not as young as I used to be. I've spent my career at the University of Minnesota, and I'm proud to say that I have been here. And I really do want to underpin what Caroline said, was that we have a jewel within the state of Minnesota at the University of Minnesota, and I do hope that you continue to support us. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I believe, Senator Miller, you had a question. Senator Miller.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation, and thank you for the work you do, including Mr. Stanton, for helping provide the students in the state of Minnesota top-quality education. And we certainly appreciate that. Thank you to all the students for being here. My question for the testifiers up there on Senate File 268, what is your position on that?
We support what the thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. We support what the regents and the president of the University of Minnesota decide to do. So we don't have specific recommendations for this particular file because the tuition rates are set for us at the University of Minnesota by the regents and the president.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Other questions for Senator Pappas?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'd just like to thank Professor Hayes and the other professors for coming here today. It's really important that we hear more and more from the work that's being done at the university. And I hope my colleagues share my opinion that it's always impressive. It's always exciting. We love to hear about the research, and it's always fun to hear about the teaching as well and how the teaching and the research works together. And I'm just very proud to have you here today. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Pappas and committee members. And I want to repeat the invitation that you are all welcome and encouraged to come over anytime. We will, in fact, put together a custom tour for you based on your interests, or we will, if you're not sure what you want to see, we'll pick a selection and hope you enjoy it. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you coming.
Oh, Madam Chair.
Oh, Senator Tomasoni.
I think if I'm not mistaken, I had something to do with that Frontenac grape because we gave the university some money in one of my bills to develop a hardier vine so that they could survive the winters. Isn't that right?
Take all the credit.
Ms. Hoover.
Madam Chair, committee members. Yes, thank you very much.
And you take full advantage of that.
Oh, yeah. Grapes are very good for you, Madam Chair.
I understand that, Senator Tomasoni. Okay. Thank you very much. And I will ask just quickly if there was anyone else I've come to the end of my list of folks who have signed up to testify, but if there was anybody else who'd like to testify in the bill, we would entertain that. If not, Senator Carlson.
Madam Chair, I would move that we lay over Senate File 268 for possible inclusion in the higher ed omnibus bill.
Thank you very much. Any discussion on Senate File 268? Seeing none, the motion to lay it over for possible inclusion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion does prevail.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you very much. And there's no other action in front of the committee, but we will be having the joint committee this evening at 5:30, and we're in the state office, room 5 of the state office building this evening for the joint Regent House and Senate Higher Ed Committee, 5:30. So we will adjourn this meeting, and we will see you this evening. We are adjourned.
Don't forget about St. Louis County.
Presentation.
Yes, St. Louis County.
Yeah, how are you?
Thanks for letting me in.
Oh, it's great.
I said that today, and I got